Hello, I'm Brother Gregory, and we're going to talk about the kingdom of God. And I just ran in again to do this show. I was delayed slightly because a coyote killed one of our sheep, and he's been hunting them the last. He actually was earlier, but we thwarted him, but now he's back. And he's got a bunch of guys with him, and they're hunting their sheep down, and they don't seem to eat them. They just want to kill them for fun. And we have this little thing where we tell people that everything that happens in the field happens in the world next. And of course, we already see that there are large numbers of people killing other people in often macabre and murderous ways. And causing huge migrations of hundreds of thousands, maybe millions of people, because of their ruthless, bloodthirsty approach. People are calling them radical Muslims. It doesn't really have anything to do with being Muslims. I mean, they use that as an excuse. It's just murderous, cutthroat guys who like to dominate other people, including murder, rape, imprisonment. They're just abusive. They don't need to do these things. They want to do them. They want to take your life. They want to dominate your life. They're not like you. You're a nice guy, right? You wouldn't think of wanting to do those things. But the reality is most of the people in the United States do want to do those things. Most of the people in the world today do want to do those things. Not as much as the terrorists that are doing this in the Middle East. Or, you know, we've had the same kind of Holocaust going on in Africa, Indonesia, their invasion of East Timor. Hundreds of thousands of people were murdered. Whole rape camps are going on there. But there was a news blackout on that. They didn't want Americans to see that because Americans supplied the Indonesians with the guns to do it. They actually... I seen the video of them offloading from U.S. military ships onto Indonesian ships who then went directly to East Timor and took over the country. One of the few countries in the world that were actually operating in the black. They were a rich country. People were not real rich or living high, but they ate, they took care of one another. They had some natural resources, so they were not in debt like other countries. But one thing they did not have is they didn't have a Federal Reserve System. But within months of being conquered, they had one. And I always found all that interesting. It was part of my learning. This was a number of years ago. But now we have this thing in the Middle East, and we have millions of, or hundreds of thousands, and maybe as many millions of people that will eventually migrate to parts of Europe. And you know, they're not going to go to Chad and places like that because they've already been assassinating Christians and stuff there for a long time. Nobody cared about that. But some film crew got a picture of a boy drowned along the Mediterranean, and everybody gets worked up. And that's one of the things, the opinion of the American people are driven by images, pictures, videos. And it's not driven by wisdom. Now, this morning we talked about hidden messages on shows. We talked about how some people saw that tsunami that killed over 240,000 people in a matter of hours across the Pacific in one day. They killed huge numbers of people, did millions of dollars worth of damage because of an earthquake in Indonesia. And then the tidal wave, the tsunami, traveled across the ocean and flooded huge areas and just came in and devastated. This fascinating film of survivors who filmed the tsunami coming in and with their cell phones, etc. And you have conversations during the tsunami and afterwards telling what it was like. And there's some fascinating things, and I won't go through it all because I already spoke about it in the original part of this series, which is the name Messages. And there was a young boy who knew. He kept having these dreams that something terrible was going to happen. We can't go down to the beach. And, of course, he wasn't going down to the beach. And they were all saying, oh, no, everything's okay. It's just fine. Everything, no, there's something bad. And, of course, it came in. And he wasn't down at the beach, but the tsunami came a long ways in, and it destroyed the building. And he survived. He was in the hospital when his family found him. But his sister was dead, and he knew it. He knew she was dead. He had premonitions about the whole thing, but he didn't have clear enough premonition to say, wait a minute, it's not only a bad thing, it's an earthquake in Indonesia going to cause a tsunami that's coming in at 8 o'clock this morning. He didn't have that kind of specific information. I think he could have. I think he could have actually had that intuitively known, that much detail. And he could have got his family, let's just take a drive up in the hills. And they probably try to tell other people. And this has happened many times before these disasters where many people die. Somebody knew about it. And they try to tell people. Nobody believed it. Nobody was believing it as it was happening. They were watching it happen. And they didn't know what to do. Somebody did know what to do, and he was trying to do it, but he ran into it just a tiny little problem, and he became incapacitated and could not make a decision like going left or right. And you could see this on the video. This was amazing. This is a traumatic event, and people, you're about to have 100,000, 200,000 people die. And it's like there's a disturbance in the force. The people know about it. They know it's coming. Other people don't know it's coming. You actually see people like almost in slow motion, not really knowing what to do. It's as if they're collectively kind of numbed by the trauma of the event. Other people jump right into action and are saving people left and right. Why are some people so action-oriented who perceive the danger? Even some people left before they had this sense about them. I always remember the story of a guy who lived in Hiroshima. And he never missed work. He always went to work. One morning he decided, I'm not going to work, I'm going to go fishing. And he just picked up his fishing pole and went fishing. When he came back, Hiroshima was gone. He wasn't there. LA earthquake. Somebody always went to work with his buddies. They all got in the same car and went every morning. That morning of the big earthquake, Northridge earthquake, he said, no, I'm not going with you guys. I'm going to take my own car. All those guys died when an overpass fell on top of them. But he didn't die. He didn't go there. Number of times, it's kind of like with Unbreakable, where you get guys, somebody's going to get on an airplane. Everybody's getting on an airplane. One guy suddenly decides, I'm not getting on the airplane. One out of, 400 passengers decides, I'm not getting on the airplane. And he doesn't get on. Why? How did he know? He didn't know exactly. He didn't say, well, that plane's going to crash. I'm not going to get on it. He just knew, I can't get on it. Does that happen to you often? Because if it doesn't, you need to start making it happen to you often. You're going to need to have that kind of skill. You can develop that kind of skill. And I talked about that in earlier shows. At what it takes. And actually, what it takes, it was Christ was trying to teach you. The kingdom of God thing. That's what it takes in order to develop that ability. Now, some people have that naturally to some degree, but they don't develop it. It gives them mixed messages. They see bad things coming, but then they're gripped by fear, and then they don't know what to do. or they see bad things coming and they think that the message came to them so they could save themselves. And the message actually came to them so that they could save others. But they didn't do that. And so they themselves are lost. Even though they have the knowledge that this is going to happen, this is going to happen, this is going to happen, they make the wrong choices on how to avoid the detrimental effects of what's coming. You know, it's like they stock up all kinds of canned foods and freeze-dried foods and maybe get a cabin in the woods and all these kinds of things. But then something they didn't see causes them to lose it all. You know, kind of like the House of Ushers. He best laid plans of mice and men often go astray. So how do you perceive the future and perceive what you need to do about it? We talked about, you know, this migration of people, many of them being persecuted in their own countries, going up to Europe, is going to end Europe. Europe, as you know it, is going to be gone. It's absolutely going to disappear. It was already going to disappear. It was already doomed because of socialism. Socialism has castrated Europeans. That's right. Absolutely castrated Europeans. You know, there's hope. There's still hope, but the birth rate in Europe is so low in some countries. Not just the wealthy countries, sometimes the poor countries. But the birth rate is so low that sociologists and anthropologists say that as a culture, it cannot survive. That it is doomed. Because economically, as a culture, as a people, as a nation, it's doomed because the birth rate is so low. They're not reproducing themselves. And when they're, and yet now they're extremely dependent upon socialism, which requires that you have young people entering the workforce to take care of the elderly. Well, they're not there. So in order to keep governments functioning, in other words, the people in power, they have to let in immigrants because there isn't enough babies being born, so they have to let in immigrants. Except these immigrants don't have the same culture, the same customs, the same genetic memory. And we talked about that. We gave examples of how children are switched at birth, raised in a completely different family, different environment, still show the traits and even ideologies and proclivities and attitudes of their natural parents, even though they're not raised by their natural parents. They're raised by somebody else who has a whole different system and way of thinking. What was the movie, Big Business or something, you know, where Bette Midler and them were switched at birth, the twins. And that actually has happened in real life, where it wasn't necessarily twins, but there were twins that were divided. And it happens by the thousands, to tell you the truth. Most people don't realize how often it does happen. Sometimes it's by design because somebody has an out-of-wedlock child and they're forced to give it up, or out-of-wedlock twins and they give it up and the twins go to two different families. And then I gave the story, I won't go into the whole story, about the woman who gave up her daughter when she was a teenager in high school, ended up marrying the boy who was the father after college, and they never were able to have children. Moved away, ended up living in New York, started a business, And then she wanted to, her husband was about to retire, so she wanted to spend more time with him. And she was going to turn the business over to her favorite employee in the business, which ended up being her daughter. She didn't even know it. Her daughter had traveled miles and miles and miles after she grew up, went to college, didn't have any idea who her real mother was. And she ended up working for her real mother in New York City. And they loved each other before they knew they were mother and daughter. Now, that's just a coincidence, of course, because there is no God. But, of course, there is. And their love for one another, you know. She wasn't a promiscuous girl. One time, screwed up and got pregnant. And, like I said, she and the boy, you know, made a mistake. And the parents made her give it up of the child. But there was a bond there that could not be broken. Now, there are good bonds and there are bad bonds. You got people in countries that had just as many resources as the United States. People were just as intelligent. They weren't, brain damaged or anything. But their nation is not a success. As a matter of fact, their nation is full of violence, tyranny, thugs, gangs rule the streets, and the people have to flee. They have to flee to some place where there's order and wealth and make a living in a better place, because this place is terrible. Because all these bad people here. Except for the fact that the reason all those bad people are there, because something they don't know. Something they won't accept. Something they won't do. They're slothful. Intending to the weightier matters. So tyrants come. They elect leaders. So tyrants come. And take and take and take. They don't care about their neighbors as much as they care about themselves, so tyrants take over the neighborhood. And they have to flee. And they come here. And they bring their sloth with them. You say, well, wait a minute, these people are hardworking people. They're hardworking, but they're missing certain social virtues in their character. And instead of suffering and developing the social virtue that says we can't wait for some Zorro to come and save us. We have to stop the evil that is in our community. We have to care about one another enough to stop the evil. We're in the majority. Why are the evil people succeeding against us? Because we don't care enough about one another. So let's go to America and not care about one another. Now, actually, you can go and you'll find family-oriented people there. You'll find people sending money back home. They care about their family, but they don't care about others. They love those who love them, but they don't love those more distant. They're very community-oriented, but just their little community, their friends, their family. And tyrants rise up because just your family can't stop them. You have to care about your neighbor, your distant neighbor, as much as you care about yourself if you want to be free. They don't. So they're not free. So they come here to get our freedom. Except we're not free anymore either. We've forgotten the wisdom of our own success. We've abandoned the ways of America. We still live in a place we call America, but we're not really Americans, as Americans were defined 100, 150 years ago. We've become something else. We've lost our culture. How did we do it? We were invaded by an idea, socialism. And that is why Europe has been castrated and has such a low birth rate. They don't need the family to take care of them anymore. Parents don't need the family to take care of them. We got social welfare. government will take care of us. We don't need children. Oh, we'll have a token child, you know, maybe one kid. But we're not going to have a lot of kids because we don't need them. There's no purpose. And I mentioned, and I have to mention it again because it's so important. People always say, oh, when there was a rural economy, the farmers always had large families because they needed the workforce. No, that is not the case at all. If you need a workforce, you just go hire somebody. Because, you know, having a baby so you can have a workforce, how much work are you going to get out of that baby? You're not going to get any work out of that baby. That baby's going to be nothing but work for years and years and years. Now, that baby may be grow up to be a man and he'll take care of you in your old age. And that could be way in the back of your mind, but that it, you don't think about that when you're having children. The reason farmers had lots of children is because farmers were in the business of giving and preserving and producing life. They produce calves and chickens, sheep. They worked hard to see that they were fed and grew and prospered and were fruitful. They produced trees and gardens and fields of grain. They loved making things grow. My son planted oats this year in a field that we lease. And he said that was just so much fun, planting oats. My son-in-law, for the first time, he borrowed some of that same equipment and he planted a grain in his field. He's gone away. He'll be back for the Burning Bush Festival next week. Well, just in the time that he is gone, his field, it's a winter crop of grain. It will grow over the winter. Has jumped like 4 inches. The whole field that was dirt has turned to green. He's going to think that's cool. Where there was no life, now but a few weeds, now there's a whole field of grain, 2 fields of grain. Growing up, turning green. There's something exciting about that. That same excitement comes with producing children. Watching them grow. Teaching them. Watching them learn. Learning to interact. People didn't have children because, oh, we need another worker. Better pop out another baby. They don't think that way. That baby's going to be work, work, work. I mean, he's going to even be able to produce enough food to feed himself until he's like 15, maybe 12, you know. So, but you don't need that in socialism. You got the state, but you do need that in socialism. Because if your families don't have children, who's going to provide for you in your old age? The government just doesn't invent the money. So what's been happening, and you see it in every country, United States, Canada, France, everywhere, they're borrowing money against the future so that they can have benefits today, which means they're cursing their children with debt. Now, if you want to reverse what's taking place, this castrating of mankind, see, because now these immigrants, they're coming up and they still have the idea of having big families because there is socialism in many of the countries they're coming from, but it's not very effective socialism because there's also corrupt governments. And so they have this in their culture of having large families. Now, they used to have large families in Denmark. They used to have large families in Sweden. It was a big thing, have children. They wanted lots of children. They don't anymore. They don't need it. They got government. But they do need it, and that's why all the governments are failing. Because they are not being fruitful and multiplying. People say, oh, well, there's overpopulation. We have to watch it. There is an overpopulation. It absolutely is. Overpopulation is not a problem anywhere in the world. Quality of mankind, that's a problem. You have so much land left in the world. I mean, you take everybody in the world, you could probably cram them in one state. And even have room left over. There is so much land out there that sits fallow, that doesn't grow anything, that could be growing and nurturing and everything. We depend heavily on machinery, so we're actually depleting some of the soil. But if you had everybody working out there in the soil, this planet, depending on your lifestyle and the caliber of people, this planet could easily, without losing anything, but gaining with the right quality of people, you could have 70 billion people living on this planet. 70 billion people. And you could be happy. And you're not polluted. But you have to change your lifestyle. You're not ready for that. You don't know how. Because you haven't repented yet. You haven't turned around. You haven't started operating according to the ways of Christ or the ways of Moses. The ways of righteousness. So Europe is doomed. America is not far behind. Canada, doomed. Their birth rates are all way too low. They're dependent upon immigrants to come in order to create a larger workforce, in order to tax enough to, and it won't be enough. They'll still be borrowing money against the future, but they'll stay in power a little bit longer. But they're actually running out of that time. And so they're going to try something different. It's kind of like the doomsday machine with Dr. No. They're going to let a couple billion of you die off. Maybe more than a couple billion. Several billion. They think, well, get rid of all those people. We don't need them. We only need ourselves, because they only care about themselves. But the reality of this consciousness that has seized them, just like it seized Saul, is coming about because you are neglecting your responsibilities. It's a spirit that comes in, because nature abhors a vacuum. It's a spirit that comes in and dwells in the hearts and minds of the people. You entertain it every time you send your kids to public school. Every time you say, well, the government needs to take care of my parents with Social Security, Medicare, Medicaid. Oh, I need health care. I need to get a job here because that's good health care. You always want somebody else to take care of you. You don't want to come together. You guys could come together and take care of one another way better than these bureaucracies. What you need is an adhocracy. That's right, you need an adhocracy. We got an article just went up on the, actually it was there before, but I added to it, on adhocracies. See, what you have now is a democracy with a bureaucracy, and you need an adhocracy with a little anarchy thrown in. But you also need, but it won't work unless you have righteousness and social virtue. So what you need to do to become free is develop social virtue. So we're going to go to a break. And then we'll come back and we'll talk about how you can develop the social virtue that will raise the dead, because you're as good as dead already. And, you know, as a society, I'm not talking to you individually, I'm talking in general terms. But anyway, we'll talk about that when we come back to Keys to the Kingdom after this brief break. Trying to run through all these emails. We have a network of people that are starting to gather, and we call it the network. We call it the Living Network. Is actually what you want to become a part of. The network is a series of email groups that are based on geographical location, because it is absolutely essential that you begin to develop a relationship with other people. that are also seeking the kingdom of God and his righteousness. Now, that kingdom of God and his righteousness, I gave you a little bit of an idea. We shared some information about the great boat lift that took place during 9-1-1, where some Coast Guard guys said, oh, we're going to need help getting all these thousands, hundreds of thousands of people off the docks because there's no way for them to get out of the city, and a lot of them were in bad shape. And so suddenly just boats showed up everywhere. People just, you know, used their ships and their boats, which cost them a lot of money because it a lot of fuel involved. And they went and started rescuing people. It was the largest boat lift in the history of mankind. And a lot of people didn't even know what was going on, but the people who were saved knew what was going on. And what, you know, I pointed out that we have a video for that, and you can find it at the Adhocracy page, because that was really Adhocracy for a day. No bureaucracy, no rulers, nobody exercising authority, just people helping people in a big way, taking resources and skills that they already had, and they came to save people. But it was a dramatic event. And there will be great opportunities in the future, because there's going to be a lot more dramatic events. A lot more dramatic than that. But you need to start practicing that, because we're really out of practice. We don't know how to do that. You know, I was reading about the early settlers in America. Half the pilgrims died the first year. But pilgrims were actually coming to each other's aid. Even the guys who came in the boat, the Sparrow, which is miraculous that these guys crossed the Atlantic in this tiny open boat to get to America. I mean, it's like, you guys are crazy. They did. They still have the Sparrow. It still exists. I mean, you can, it's not seaworthy. It's just got a few boards left, but you can get an idea how big it is. Look it up on the internet. You can see pictures of it. And there's a bunch of guys just loaded into this thing with whatever supplies they had, and they crossed the Atlantic and came to America. And they got into trouble right away because they didn't know what they were doing. They were completely ill-equipped, and soon they were starving, and the Indians were just about ready to clunk them in the head because they were such useless people. But they... that hard, that fasting, that difficult times began to spur something in these guys. But the other people that were there that were having a hard time too, like I said, half the pilgrims were dead the first year, they began to learn things. They had to unlearn some things that they already thought they knew. They came with a kind of a socialist heart that, you know, from each according to his ability, to each according to his need. And they were going to enforce this to a bureaucracy that they were going to create. And they were starving every year. And finally they said, no, we're not going to have a bureaucracy. We're not going to have socialism. They're not using those terms. We're going to have whatever you make is yours. And if people need help, they're going to have to depend upon charity. And they just saw that. I mean, the difficulty of people starving, digging up bodies and eating them, I mean, it was bad. It's going to be bad again. But it's not going to be a few hundred settlers here and there. It's going to be millions of people. You're going to get a crash course in righteousness. Because if you don't do this righteously, you're done. You're not going to know where to be. You're not going to know how to get there. And when you get there, you're not going to know what to do. So you have to awaken to the ways of righteousness. And now there's spiritual realms all around you, quantum realms, whatever you want to call it, and we've talked about that before. And there are spirits that dwell in people. I mean, your spirit dwells in there. Your attitudes, your corporeal and incorporeal. Incorporeal is those spiritual elements that we don't really see, but we see them pop up. We see those connections, like the twins who, naming their kids the same name, raised in different families, never knew each other from the day they were born, and yet they're doing that. They have the same paintings hanging on the wall. You know, there's millions of paintings and pictures that you could hang on your wall. They both saw the same picture and said, I need that hanging on my wall. And they hang it on their wall. Why? They're twins. Oh, I mean, did they inherit a love for that picture? And genetically? No. They're communicating. They're communicating with each other. Culture is a way of communicating. What we talk about as culture is, you know, like you eat salsa and you like jalapenos and you have Cinco de Mayo Day and this is part of your culture. And other things that you remember in history that are taught to you with these events and these holidays are reminders of things that your culture learned. And they teach you. But there's another more subtle passing down of culture to culture. And it is genetic. Genetically remembered. Connected to. Mysteriously. Mystically. Well, that's not the only thing that you're connected to. You can be connected to God. His spirit could dwell in you and show you things. Show you, hey, you know, tidal wave coming today. You better get up on high ground. And you say, oh my gosh, I had this dream that something came to me and I just realized that it was a tidal wave coming and I had to go to higher ground and we were saved. We tried to get other people to come, but they just looked at us funny and stared at us. We ran out of time, so we ran up on the hill. That's real. Because something is awakening you and showing you a little bit into the future enough so that you can do something about it. Don't go through that door. Don't get on that plane. Don't go with those people. And you just know. And you act upon what you just know, this revelation. That's real. You may not think it's real for you, but it needs to be real. It probably is real for you at times, but you haven't thought in those terms. But you think back. How'd you know? And even if you have that ability, how do you keep that ability pure? Because you see something frightful coming. Then you act upon fear, it can actually be your undoing, which I explained using the example of Macbeth. They told him the future, and he began to act upon what they told him because it sounded like it was really good, but it actually what he did brought about the future, but the future was not as hunky-dory as he thought it was going to be. As a matter of fact, it brought about his destruction. So there is a spiritual realm. There's a mental realm, and they're affecting each other. How do you draw the spirit of righteousness in you? The spirit that giveth life, because there's a spirit that taketh life away. And there's a spirit that giveth life. You want the spirit that giveth life. Well, the first thing you have to do, because I said I was going to tell you what you need to do, is you need to think in terms of how do I give life to others? When you were farmers, you did that every day. I got to save this calf, save this colt, protect the chickens. Your whole life is immersed in the idea of making other things alive and keep them alive and keep them healthy. And that's what you're all about. That's where you're at. That's the spirit that is being cultivated in you. First thing they did in Egypt, they wanted to remove them from the farms and put them in the cities. Socialism makes it so you don't have to care about your neighbor. Oh, somebody's robbing him? He better call the cops. You're not going. That's not my job. You better call the police. Call the professionals. Need to teach your kids? Oh, better call the professionals. We'll send them to school. Well, I can't do that. You know, I'm busy. And besides, I want to watch TV at night. I don't want to have to teach my kids math. Besides, I was never very good at math. So I'll have total strangers teach them math. Who may be homosexuals, may be child molesters, may be mass murderers. Who knows? But I will put my children in charge by those people. And their spirits, the spirit that's in them can be communicated into my children, because they'll be with them all day. And you wonder where your children who are educated in school have more behavioral problems than kids that are home taught. Statistical fact. They're more likely to be on welfare than kids that are home taught. They're more likely not to have their own business than kids that are home taught. They will be likely to score 30% lower on tests than kids that are home taught. These are all statistics that come out of studies by people who wanted to prove that homeschooling was a bad thing. I know several people who, over the years, who were doing these studies to try to prove that homeschooling is a bad idea, and they now homeschool, including a public school teacher and a public school principal. Home teach their kids. They won't send their kids to the very schools they work in. Amazing. Amazing. Guarantee that your children will learn less, send them to school. Don't teach them at home. Guarantee that you will learn less, do the same thing. Because you can learn from your children and trying to teach them. But anyway, if you want life, you have to spend your life offering life to others, taking care of others. I gave the story before of somebody who worked for somebody I know, known them all their life, and they were always having problems. They think they needed another job, and they couldn't hold on to money, and they said, look, you don't need another job. You need to start thinking about other people. They were on depression medicine, everything. You need to start thinking about other people. So go down and volunteer here or there. So everybody in the network should be forming congregations that want to volunteer to help other people. You will not be good at it at first, but if you strive and work at it, you will get better at it. I mean, first time I went to play tennis, I was terrible. Then I thought I was really good, and then I went up against somebody who was really good, and they beat the pants off me. But the same way with chess. You know, there's so many layers of that skill. But you know this, you will not get better unless you try. But when you sacrifice the life you have for others and the sake of righteousness, God will bless you mysteriously, spiritually. And that will telegraph into physically being blessed and nurtured in the spirit. What's coming now is a lot of people already here, a lot of people, is a spirit of bite one another is okay. Take care, be taken care of by men who are going to exercise and take away from your neighbor by authority. That's okay in your mind. Everybody's told you that's okay. You need to get that out of your mind. And the only way to really do it is to start to turn around and start doing things differently. You're not going to be able to form a congregation of record that's going to take care of all social welfare overnight. Unless you got some rich people in your congregation. But it's not just about taking care of the social welfare in your little congregation. If you want to reach out, it's like an antenna. You become an antenna. So you stick this antenna up and it begins to receive signals from far away. And so in order to do that, you need to stick up and you need to care about people far away. And then that spiritual power will come to you. And you will have more revelations. What you bind on earth is bound in heaven. What you loose on earth is loosed in heaven. What you give away will come back to you. If you truly give it away. That's what we're, you need to actually do, and it has a spiritual effect. So I touched on a bunch of guys, and actually there I've already had calls from people that says, why didn't you mention this guy? Why didn't you mention that guy? And what they are is these Patriot Guru guys. I don't know, maybe I shouldn't call them Patriot Guru guys. And I named them. You know, and I could name you, you know, apostate ministers left and right. And I name these guys because they have a little bit different. And I picked these guys because each one of them is a little bit different. It was, you know, Robert Menard, Sam Kennedy, Winston Shrout, and Arthur and Fiona Christen. Each of them have a little bit different approach, but they all are missing something that we find in the gospel. And some of them have a fairly decent knowledge of the Bible. But they don't, they read it with preconceived notions and they missed some of these secrets. And some of them they missed because they don't want to hear it. You do not want to be somebody who is always pointing out what everybody else has done wrong. You do not want to be putting blame on everybody else for your bondage. The Bible is very clear in telling us that the slothful shall be under tribute. It doesn't say the ones who are tricked by very clever men who will offer them this will be under tribute. It says the slothful shall be under tribute. See, if you're slothful in tending to the weightier matters, you will lose your sight. You will not see what's really going on. Jesus says, I come to give sight to the blind and to take away the sight from those who say they see. These guys all think they see, but what they don't see is what will really give them insight. I mean, revelation type insight. Where you actually know, I can't walk through that door, I will die. You know, there's a scene it's the pre-crime movie, Tom Cruise. But anyway, the girl who's supposed to be this kind of perceptive person who's been kept, you know, real weak and everything. She's being dragged along in this shopping mall. And she stops the guy who's taking her, who's trying to help her, stops him for a second and waits. And then she suddenly says, now you can go. And he goes. And the reason they had to stop, they had to wait till this guy walking along with this big, huge stack of balloons got into place a few seconds later, so that when they moved along, they would not be seen because the guy with the balloons is blocking the vision of the bad guys. That's the kind of perception you want to know. Now, you don't need to know that there will be a guy, but you just know. And you can actually do this. This is real. Your perception can get so strong, and there's no trick to doing it. It has to do with laying down your life, taking the life that God gives you and investing it in other people in a way that strengthens them, helps them see, helps them live. You see, this socialist thing where I only want to have one kid because, you know, two kids are a lot of trouble. When you should actually, you could probably have six or seven kids. You know, I had six children. I've got dozens grandchildren, great-grandchildren. Now, the world has had a tremendous effect on them. It's constantly trying to brainwash them. But you know, I'm lurking there. Spirit's lurking there. But, and they will not have such a difficulty in seeing the truth during hard times, as a lot of you will be absolutely like I was explaining with the people in the tsunamis. They could see it coming, but they could not compute. They didn't know what to do with that information. They didn't know what to do to avoid the destruction that was coming. They could just, it was beyond them. Because they were not, it's revelation that will save you. Revelation in the moment that will save you. Now, I may tell you to stock up now, but It may tell you, don't worry about stocking up because you're going to have to leave in a second and you won't be able to carry all this stuff with you. But maybe it'll have you stock up so that when you leave it behind, it will save somebody else. I mean, there are so many different variables. You need daily, moment by moment revelation. One of the tricks is to be still and know. It's not really a trick because you can't be still unless you have this righteous intent for righteousness. You know, and there's meditation exercises that will help you be still, but it won't do you any good unless you have this intent to seek the kingdom of God, which is to free all men, and the righteousness of God, which is to do it by faith, hope, and charity in the perfect law of liberty. But that begins to awaken a flow of energy through you that will help you see what you could not see before. I gave you lots of examples in earlier programs, the last two earlier programs that we do in the morning, that I gave examples of how people saved other people's lives or helped other people that were in distress and found things that were unfindable because they relied upon this spiritual revelation. And when I look at the videos for Robert Menard and Sam Kennedy and Winston Shroud, each one of them is missing critical, critical information and skills. And it's almost always to do, they are not preaching what Christ preached. They are preaching that, yeah, you're in bondage and that they're using you and you become human resources and merchandise. Yes. And now some of them, you know, are talking about producing their own food and becoming a community, but they're missing something. And I don't want to go through each individual. But if you go down the checklist that Christ gave you, you need to forgive others. You can't be angry at the system. Your intent has to be to save the people, the bureaucrats that are in the system. You know, the DMV guy, whoever it was who was doing bad to you, abusing his power, you have to want them saved as much as anybody else. You cannot just love those who love you. You must love your enemy. You must love those who hate you. That will be critical. When you can start doing that, forgiving, you have to walk in forgiveness. You're going to turn around, and your own temple will be cleaner than ever before, and you will begin to see things more clearly. And when you open your eyes after this, you know, you go sit down, and when you feel yourself getting angry, you go sit down by yourself, close your eyes. Be aware of yourself sitting there and realize, I need to forgive. This has to be real. You can't just repeat it in your head. I need to forgive them. I need to let this anger that's in me go. I need to fast from entertaining this anger or fear. Whatever it is, anger or fear, irrelevant. You have to let that go. And when sometimes if you do that, if you really sincerely do that, when you open your eyes, the world will be a different color. You'll actually see, it looks like everything's a little bit different color. You'll see the world in a new light. And we have that phrase, that's actually what will be taking place. You will be seeing the world in a new light. Very important that you interact with other people. You can be an absolute saint when you're all by yourself, but with other people, it tests you. Family tests you. Husband and wife test each other by their nature. That's why God created them that way. So it's very important you gather together in congregations, not just to help you out your congregation, but to help out people who don't even know. The reverse of the red button, the white button. And God will bless you Maybe not with $1 million, but with a great reward. And until then, peace on your house. And may God be with you. God bless.
Welcome to the Keys of the Kingdom with Brother Gregory of His Holy Church.